Absolutely. Research lab down in Jacksonville Beach, Florida.
Yep.
We work with some of the largest companies in the world for website optimization. So we try to figure out what actually works online. And my mantra for today is data. If you can measure it, you should try to figure out what your people are doing. So that's what I'm all about, is the data.
Thanks. Hi, I'm Cam Brown. I'm with Kingfish Media here in Boston. We're a marketing agency, and we're a marketing agency that coaches our clients to use content to develop engagement with some of their different targets. I think that's a lot of what we're going to talk about today. We develop four platforms: interactive, face-to-face, and yes, even some print still. But primarily, we're fairly digitally focused.
Hi, I'm Eric Kim. I'm the CEO and founder of Twyla. Twyla is a content marketing platform based on Twitter. Basically, it enables you to take all the content you're putting out on Twitter and harvest its long-term value, making the content more durable, more accessible to a larger audience, findable on search engines, and make it transactional as well, in order to help you drive leads out of your Twitter activity.
Thanks, guys. So the good news is that digital ad spending is on track to surpass print spending for the first time ever this year, according to eMarketer. The bad news is that 71% of that online ad spend will be on paid search and display. So the question to you guys, knowing how ineffective display advertising is in terms of click-through rates, the goal for everybody these days is to get beyond that low CPM, low click-through trap. I want to talk a little bit about why you think that is such a trap, and then also, but mostly focus on what we need to do to fix that. So talk a little bit, maybe Spencer, you can start this, about why is it so hard to get an audience's attention these days, and then we'll segue into how you fix that.
Well, I think, to me, the difference between online ads and, say, direct mail, you can send it directly in the house. They open it, they're looking at it. You have their 100% attention. The problem with the web, it's kind of like a billboard on the web highway. You're driving past it, you see it, whoop, it's gone. So as far as that interaction and that motivation of people getting to that, you really have to attract their attention, build the interest, and ask for a click in a very, very short period of time. So in many ways, you'd say direct mail is email, and banner ads are, the billboards. So the difference there, that's traditionally, billboards haven't done that well anyway. So to me, what's the difference? In many ways, it's whether those ads are overpriced for the benefit you have in there. So I think the more we measure that, I think they'll probably come more in alignment with what we should be paying for a lead or a sale.
I think the brevity that Spencer just talked about is really important. I mean, marketers today are doing everything they possibly can to build some kind of relationship with their customers and with their prospects. And you just defined sort of the epitome of an interruptive-based model. And what we're seeing more and more, and I would imagine most people here are seeing, is the world has shifted to permission-based, and you can't do that with a quick interruption. You have to ask people, hey, do you want to get some information from me? I think we can give you something you need, or teach you something, or help you do your job better. And that's a very different give and take that you just can't get with billboards.
Yeah, I really liked Spencer's analogy of the billboard, driving down the highway at 60 miles an hour and coming across a billboard. And if you think that's fast, 60 miles per hour, once you're on Twitter or Facebook, you're driving 120 miles per hour and that billboard's going by even faster. And so the trick really is, billboards are not going to work anymore in those different types of contexts. What is it that's going to work? What is it really that's not necessarily going to get your attention driving 120 miles per hour, but what is it that's going to get your attention, that's going to make you want to slow down? And, the analogy that I have, which builds on that, is, what is the rest stop or the exit sign that you're going to put on the highway that's going to make somebody want to pull over, sit down, and enjoy whatever they found or whatever they're looking for once they actually pull off?
So can digital be an effective medium for brand advertising, or is it all about conversions? Can digital be an effective medium for brand advertising?
Well, I think it can if you maybe redefine what advertising is about, right? Traditional advertising oftentimes is one big bold message that you're pushing out to your audience. What we're discovering more and more is that the kind of advertising, quote unquote, that really works in terms of getting people to connect with it is, you know, this notion that we're going to be talking about quite a bit, most likely, is storytelling. Connecting with a consumer through storytelling rather than a broadcast message. And there's a really interesting reason why storytelling works as opposed to just broadcast messaging, which I learned through my daughter's first grade teacher a couple weeks ago, which is really interesting. Storytelling is very interesting as a medium for teaching and also for, if you want to call it advertising, is because typically when you listen to a story, when you read it, or when you kind of see it animated, taking in the story, it tends to be a left-brain activity. You're hearing words, you're hearing these symbols you have to interpret. And what you do is, because a story never has all of the details in it, you actually allow the consumer to then fill in the details and put themselves in the story. So first of all, they transpose themselves into the story. Then the second piece is, if the story is told, you actually create an image in your own mind of what that is. And creating that image is a right-brain activity. And so all of a sudden, now you've got an activity, storytelling, which connects the left and the right hemisphere of the brain, and it becomes an integral activity, which allows whatever the message is to connect with you at a much deeper level, whether it's emotional or at the gut level.
I want to talk more about storytelling. Before we do, I want to focus a little bit more on that attention piece. Spencer, you've done a lot of, MetLabs has done a lot of research on conversions and the things that get people's attentions online. Talk a little bit about that, if you would.
Well, there are five aspects that you can use to grab attention. Obviously, when you're looking at banner ads, it's size, it's color, it's action, it's shapes, and it's messaging. So you need to keep that in mind. And one of the things, just to build on what Eric was saying, is that people buy from people, they don't buy from websites. Okay, so when he's talking about stories, you need to be able to connect with that audience in that way. So once you attract that attention, building the interest, and if you're thinking about your banner ads, the next thing you need to do is to ask for the click. Okay, let the banner do what it's supposed to do. Get you to the landing page, which is actually what ends up doing the sale in that situation. So, you know, that's the things that in our research we found. And you know, with one financial institution, just by taking those simple things, grabbing attention, building interest, asking for the click, had an increase of 108% in conversions. And that's in applications for, accounts. So that's bottom line for a major financial institution, it changes their business. So that's what you can do online. You can actually see what happens, you know, when you're measuring and when you're testing. So, keep that in mind as you go forward.
So, as we work to get people's attention online, everybody's talking about content marketing these days, to the point where content marketing has almost lost much of its meaning. Eric, you mentioned storytelling. That seems to be a little more narrow, a little more focused slice of content marketing that I think is where a lot of marketers are going to end up going online. So, Cam, I know you've done a lot of work with clients on this as well. So talk about your perspective on storytelling and why that's such an effective medium, effective tactic for getting consumers' attention.
Yeah, I think Eric started to go there. We're complimenting Eric a lot today, by the way.
He's a good guy. He's worth
it. Yeah, he gave me $5 before. Did he give you any money?
No, I did not. You know, he started to talk about his daughter in first grade, and I immediately zoned out and started thinking about when I start, really learning. And that's about right. You know, it's about that early invitation from a teacher to say, hey, would you like to join us? We're talking about. And they're making you part of the process. And if you kind of click off in time, okay, well, you go from first grade, and then you're in seventh grade, and then you're in 12th grade, and suddenly people are talking at you and lecturing you. You know, you go to college, these big lecture halls with hundreds of people, you don't really have a voice. And sort of that storytelling gets lost. And I think what marketers have gotten smart about is going back to that circle in first grade and saying, we need to invite you to be part of this. And they've added a new twist to it. You know, they're not necessarily great storytellers themselves. They know the importance of it. They know they're ultimately going to build that relationship by doing a good job. But they're starting to find people who know how to tell a story. And, you know, in a odd way, you saw some of this during the Olympics, even in 30 and 60 and 90 second spots, these were pretty emotional spots we were watching. This was not buy my product. This was cry with my mom as she dresses me as a young kid type thing. That's storytelling. So what we've been tracking and what we've been working with companies on is how do you tell your story? What's unique about it? And by the way, how do you tell a story in such a way where you're not always asking for the order? I mean, look, revenue has to be tied to storytelling. It has to be tied to everything we do. However, if the first time you meet someone, you try and close them, it's not going to work. You need to nurture that over time. I've been in a number of sessions, and I'm exhausted, fatigued by the sales funnel talk I've heard today, except it's important. It's very important, and you can't be fatigued by it because you constantly have to be thinking, where is my mark in the sales funnel, and how do I talk to them? It's absolutely critical, and storytelling is a really important component of that.
Eric, you have something to add?
So what's interesting is, the world is waking up to the power of storytelling, and wow, this is something new, but it's really not new. When you look back at consumer product companies in the 50s and 60s, they understood that content is how you got somebody's attention, and so were created soap operas, right? And the big difference between back then and now is they created the soap operas, which typically had nothing to do with the product, but then they used that medium then to interject their ads in between and do a really good job at it. The big difference nowadays is, the soap opera is the ad. It is the content. It's no longer what you put in between. And that's really where advertisers need to focus, is creating great content that's engaging and that really allows you to connect with your prospect at a shared values level, at a much deeper level than just, I'm going to sell your product, really. We're on the same side. We believe in the same thing. Right?
Yeah, Rob, on top of that, I think there's another element that's really come into being today, and I would next to guarantee everyone in this room is aware of it, and that's the authenticity of the person who, of the sponsoring company, if you will. If they come across as a giant shill, and if this content comes across as trying to sell you something, fail. It will not work. You turn people off. The language really has to change. And that's a big, big thing when you're talking to a Fortune 1000, Fortune 500 company, to say to them, you've worked 75 years to build this brand, but we have to fly in the face of that a little bit if we want to be real. You're not real.
So I understand the storytelling component as it relates to, national advertising, 30-second spots, the Clydesdales running through the snow, winning one for my sixth sister type of thing with the Olympics. How does that translate to a digital setting with a B2B company that wants to do an integrated campaign? Talk a little bit more about some of those conversations you have with your clients about how that storytelling element can thread through an entire campaign and how that actually manifests itself in different assets and different components of that campaign.
Sure, you look good. Sure. There are a multitude of platforms you can use to surround your prospects or your customers with content. And when done right, one drives the other. So for an example, let's say you're going to put on a webcast. And you're going to get 300 people to attend this webcast. Well, that's all well and good for the 45 minutes of the webcast itself. But then what? What do you do? Well, what you do, if you're doing it right, is you go to each of those attendees and invite them to become part of something. Some kind of panel, some kind of forum, some kind of community. It can be organic, it can be on your own, it can be a LinkedIn type thing, it can be come join my blog or come visit my blog, sign up for my blog. But you need to think about all of the different communication tools in which you can continue to educate these folks and get them talking with one another. Again, not always selling them, but to get them talking and to get them continually thinking about your brand and what you represent. We've seen that work very well with webcasting and blogs and social media, constantly working together, all feeding off of one webcast that happened 3 weeks ago. So when it's time to do another webcast to get people further down that sales pipeline, you've got an instantly engaged audience to market to. So that would be an example that comes to mind.
Well, and how that fits in with what we do is we look at that as the value exchange. If you've got a product that's got a price and people don't want to buy it because it's too expensive, it's not too expensive. You haven't created enough value around it. So that's what Cam is talking about, is that that micro yes at every step, there's a value exchange. Will I read this headline? Will I read these bullets? Will I click on this? Will I give you my email address? Each one of those is a transaction as you go through it. Each one of them is measurable. So in our business, we look at those to see where you're converting and where you're not, as far as you're going, and then tweaking that message as you go through. Because here's the thing, we're all so busy. Why do we go to the website? From our point of view, it's visitor-centered. What do I need from you? And one of the things in talking with Eric and Cam here is I look at the value that they bring. I'm going to go and check them out more because of what I've heard so far. So I'm looking and I want more. And that's what you want to do for your visitors.
Yeah. What I like about what Cam and Spencer were saying is that storytelling doesn't mean you just tell a story and that's it, right? You need to have in mind what it is you want the audience to do, how you want them to engage. And, you know, that's the call to action. What is the call to action? And earlier today, I think it was Dharmesh Shah was saying that, know what your call to action is. And the call to action doesn't necessarily have to be fill in the lead form or download a white paper. The call to action is what is the next logical, low-friction thing that you want them to do? And it could be engaged with another video. Might have been Alan who was talking about this. So it's understanding what the right call to action is at the right moment in time, making sure that you don't dismiss the call to action. That needs to be there because you do want people to take action. But it's understanding what the right level is, the right level of engagement, what is the softest, lowest friction transaction you can do at that point in time with the amount of information that the consumer or the buyer has.
Rob, to that, so often the person in charge of sort of the content that Eric just laid out there has got sales in their title somewhere, right? Because ultimately they care about the progression, or maybe CEO or some kind of C-level. And they want the spotlight in some way. They want their voice. They want to be the person who prospects hear from all the time. And often that's not the right move. And man, that's a tough one to take on. You know, I know it's your company, I know you own all the stock, but it's not going to be your voice. It's important to bring in industry experts who bring this credibility of third party, of authenticity, so that when someone sits through something, whether they go to a website or they read a blog or they attend a webcast or they're involved in social media on the topic, they're reading something more than, hey, the salesperson's telling me it's a great product. That's absolutely crucial to have that critical third party validity.
Well, and here's the question you asked that hippo, let's use it as it is, the highest paid person in the room, are you my ideal client? If they're their ideal client, then listen to them. If they're not, you know, you need to test something else. So that's what I always get a kick out of. Do you want to sell to you? No, I'm not. Yeah. Okay, let's talk over here.
So Eric, you're doing some interesting things with Twitter and brands. Twitter doesn't exactly jump out, at me at least, as a great storytelling tool. So talk about how you're using that medium to create great stories that brands can use to increase engagement with their target audience.
Thank you. So it's interesting because, again, Twitter normally is not associated with storytelling or saying anything cohesive because it's just a spattering of 140 character pieces of micro content. What's interesting though is if you look at any person or any company's Twitter stream, their timeline over time, what you end up seeing is that there are recurring patterns in the types of themes that they talk about. And those themes are really the underlying stories or narratives, if you'd like. So they're not really structured stories, but they're narratives. And so most people when they tweet, or most companies when they tweet, don't really realize that they're actually telling stories. They're publishing narratives out there. It's very difficult to see because it comes out as just random content. What you need to do, though, is if you take a step back and look at it longer term and you start putting those pieces together thematically, then you start realizing that, yes, this brand or this person is telling narratives around multiple subjects. So they're not stories per se that have a beginning, middle, and end, but they're ongoing narratives. And those narratives are really representative of who you are as a brand, whether you're a personal brand or a company. And so something to be very aware of when you're tweeting, especially from a company account, is that over time, the consumer or the customer will start shaping their perception of who you are, what you are, through what you tweet about. And Twitter says it kind of very plainly, you are what you tweet, and in the world of Twitter, that is true. Once you realize that there are ongoing themes and narratives, and that you're able to assemble that content thematically, then you can get consumers to engage not just one tweet at a time, microseconds at a time, but minutes at a time. And once consumers engage thematically with you through narratives, then there's opportunity to go in for the ask, put in a call to action, get them to engage with you. And what we've seen by doing this on our platform is that you see click-through rates between 1.5% to 7%, which are orders of magnitude higher than traditional display ads because they're highly contextual to these different themes. And then we see lead conversion rates when people click through and actually are prompted for their email address between 7% and 22%. So there is something to this storytelling that actually works. And it doesn't have to be explicit storytelling. It's really talking longer-term narratives, being able to stay on topic on whatever your brand is about.
I think you still you touched on this a little bit, but so in this narrative, in this new world of storytelling and narratives and multi-channel campaigns, is there still a role for display advertising, or does that just go away eventually?
I think there's a role. Again, it depends on how you define display advertising. What we've seen works the best, and this is what Twitter has put to the forefront, and now Facebook's jumping on the bandwagon, which is sponsored stories, sponsored content, right? And within the context of a theme or thematic, sponsored content works really well. And again, it's drawing in people not through this wham-bam value proposition, but through something that's really relevant and interesting, and then draw them into that story, right? So I think there's a role for display, but the definition of display is going to need to change in order for it to be effective.
Well, I think when you're looking at display, it's all context. Because let's think about it. In Google, people are going and looking for something. So, of course, AdWords there are going to be more effective than something like Facebook because then they want that relationship. So it's all, if people are looking for it, they want to buy from you if it satisfies a perceived need. But you have to be very targeted in where you put that, where it's going to be correct for your ideal prospect. That's where it really comes into. If you just throw them out there like spaghetti against the wall, some of it will stick, some of it won't, some of it will stain. It'll all cost you money. So that's what you have to do is you are finding out where the best place to put your ads is what's working for you, being very disciplined about, I'm willing to pay this amount of money for a lead, and then sticking with them, okay? Because you can triple or quadruple the number of clicks, but if your conversion doesn't go up with that, you're just spending a lot more money for people. So that's where it kind of gets in there. I think there'll always be a place for it, especially as Google messes with its algorithm and makes it hard to get into the AdWords and the organic search there. But it's you've got to put it in the right spot. You know, if you've got baby advertising for mothers, go on a mother's website. You know, you're probably going to pay more for it for that targeting, but it really is worthwhile. We do a lot of call in our group up in Minnesota. We do a lot of calling. Well, you can buy leads for 50 cents a piece. Well, you waste a lot of time calling those folks. You can pay $10 a lead and close them at a much higher rate because those people are very expensive. So it's very contextual where you want to put it.
To your question about his brand. Brand advertising, in question. I'll be a little more sort of direct and say, yeah, I think it is. I think that, we've read recently that 7 out of 10 or 80%+ of CMOs are hooking their future to content marketing. They say, the way we're gonna bring this brand to life is through content marketing. The way we're gonna sell more product is through content marketing, which, if you're me, sounds pretty good. However, I've also recently been in a conversation with a company that was sort of signing on and getting ready to go, and they were all hopped up on content marketing, thrilled to be doing it. This is our future, and let's say their budget's $1. And they said, so we're gonna dedicate about 4% of our budget to content marketing, it's our future. Well, hang on, it's your future. 4% is not a lot to change the way you're doing business. Traditional advertising is very, very expensive. And to what means? How measurable is traditional advertising? And marketers demand ROI. Everybody here knows it. Marketers demand a dollar in, what am I going to get out? And through some of the strategies that we're talking about up here, they're a heck of a lot more measurable than spots on television, ads in magazines, etc. So I think, you know, we're in the learning process. Well, I take it back. We're in the education process right now of getting big brands, you know, to think about their future slightly differently. The forward-thinking CMOs have said, yep, we're good. We want to do that. Now we need the guy's CFO title to pay for it.
Well, let's drill down on that a little bit. You know, this online advertising, as inefficient as it may be, the reason the people in this room like it is because, and the reason it persists is because it is measurable, right? You can measure clicks, you can measure impressions, you can measure everything around that advertisement being served up. When we get into storytelling, that gets a little murkier, at least to me. So how do you measure that return on good storytelling, however that manifests itself? Talk about that piece about how you actually say, here's the outcome we set out to get, here's how we achieved it, and here's how we attribute that back to this white paper or that email newsletter or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Any asset you can talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a great question. I mean, look, you've got to ask people at some point to take an action. I mean, storytelling is a great, you know, catch-all, but the reality is we're trying to help our clients sell stuff. That's the name of the game. Because we know we need to help them show ROI or we're dead. So we're quite focused on that, Rob. And, you know, in the case of, you used white papers as an example, you know, white papers are still a great way to get people to sign up for something, to register, to be part of something. Number one trick is you've got to have a client that opens a kimono to you. They've got to be able to work with you on analyzing their database, on working with stratifying their database in different ways, so that you can set up tests that are fair to the project at hand. In the case of a white paper, you know, getting someone to download it, it's a start of a relationship, but you need to get them to take an action where they're really engaging with you. And there are a lot of ways to do that online, from video to webcasts, et cetera, and to spend time on websites. But if the company's good at tracking data, then you're going to have a fun ride with this client, because you're going to be able to start to talk about average cart size and how it's increased with the folks who've been getting a content strategy against them versus the test cell that isn't. You're going to be able to look at how email and maybe print combined performs versus just email or just a control group that isn't getting anything. You're going to be able to look at things like returns if it's somebody in retail. Was this relationship successful in reducing the amount of returns, thereby reducing shipping? Did we increase average cart size? Did we get people who had stopped buying from you to buy again? Did we send them a steady information? After 6 months, they made another purchase. How did the size of that cart compare to when they bought from you last? Those are the kinds of analytics that we all need to be focused on, right? Because as marketers, that's all we want to do for our clients, is show them, do it and it works. If you have someone who's not paying close attention to analytics or can't track, it's tough. It's really tough, and your life expectancy as a partner is short.
How important is the attribution piece of it, as opposed to just measuring the last click before a conversion? How important is it to be able to weight the various pieces of that integrated campaign and attribute, you know, 20% of the conversion was because of that white paper or the email that went out? Spencer, maybe you can talk to that.
Well, it's very important, because when you're making business decisions, you need to know what's working. Is it the banner? Is it the PPC? Is it the email? Is it the direct mail? Is it the TV ad? You can track all those through the internet as we go forward. What Cam is talking about with the data, not all our businesses are e-com. E-com actually, in many ways, is simpler because of the fact that it's revenue directly related. One of the things I find is two items. One is CMOs generally have the shortest tenure as C-suite executives in America, in the Fortune 500. The other piece is that, I like the quote from Henry Ford, and I believe it's Henry Ford, he says, I know half of my advertising works, I just don't know which half. And that's the real gift about the online market, because we can deal with it. But if you cannot give attribution through that, you cannot really tell what your efforts are going on. You know, we can be telling a story all day long, and if all of a sudden they come over on this landing page and they close from this banner, there was a remote place over here, you don't know that the story is actually what they first saw. So that's one of the reasons why being able to have cookies and what's that interaction and how many interactions. What we found in our research is, in fact, people need at least 6 touch points within 2 weeks to really have that consideration to buy.